All right, here we are.
Welcome
to another episode of PBJ. This is January 9th, 2026, and this is our first one of the year. Good to
2026.
See you guys.
I thought it was 3036. I don't know. What century?
The acceleration seems like it sometimes.
On this show, Max operates as if it's 3026.
Sometimes.
You know, the future is here, just not evenly distributed.
Deltron predicted it all, 3030.
Happy New Year, though.
Happy New Year, Steve.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, DK.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, Biddy.
How are things?
January 9th is a milestone in Bitcoin, or a moment in Bitcoin.
Oh, that's right.
The first actual mined block was January 9th, I believe.
The first mined block.
Isn't that correct?
I thought it was. What happened on the 3rd? Something happened on the 3rd.
The Genesis block was published.
And then nothing was mined for like a week?
Really? I didn't realize it was that long. I know there's something about the
Genesis block. You can't spend the coin. It's a special block. You can't spend the Coinbase. And that was published January 3rd.
That was published. And then it was just left. Nothing's happening. Let the week go. Nobody's mining anything.
The code was dropped. So it could have been mined within minutes. But someone had to run the software and find a block.
Okay.
And Satoshi specifically, do we think that he didn't mine the first one because he was specifically waiting for somebody else to do it?
When I spoke with him, he didn't really say.
Oh. We should have a follow-up interview with Satoshi.
Hey, Alex, can we patch Satoshi in real quick? Let's find out.
No, I don't think we know. I don't think we know what he was doing. I mean, maybe from his online activity, like messages, maybe had messages between the 3rd and the 9th. I don't know.
It's a reasonable speculation, man. Like, what else would he be doing? But
yeah. So the 3rd, the software was actually available. The Genesis block was mined. And then he kind of just like turned off mining. Just nothing happened for the next week or so, right? From the 3rd to the 9th?
Yep.
Is that true? That's how the network worked. Oh, okay.
Well, he presumably turned off the software because otherwise he would have mined a lot of blocks. The difficulty level was low.
Yeah.
Dave Ramsey or whatever is like, what happens if those nerds turn it off? He actually did that in that first week.
I don't know. I hear he was pretty busy that week with like staking his Ethereum. So I don't know.
He had to go do a press tour, you know, make sure that Wall Street was on board.
He needed to go ask permission for a few things. So we're back, boys. How was y'all's break? Where do we begin?
Oh man,
Steve's looking fancy again. I like it.
Yeah, I got some new gear,
some good swag
over the holiday break.
Yeah, how was y'all's break? What would you?
It's great. Iowa State's 15-0 now.
Oh,
first 15-0 start in school history.
You guys are balling it. In KenPom, y'all are top
number two.
Three?
KenPom,
two?
Yeah. If you go back, KenPom goes back to 1997.
Okay.
So the past 30 years. Iowa State is now a top 12 all-time team.
What is going
like
on?
Up there with like Duke 99, Duke 01.
What the hell is going on over there? Because you guys don't have the NIL. Like, how are you that good?
It's
crazy.
We're a bunch of fanatics.
I like it.
Support the team.
Yeah, there
the
it
corn.
Is.
No, great coach.
The corn. It's all the corn. The Bitcoin.
No, I mean the players could have taken 50 to 100% more money this year, and they didn't. They stayed because they loved the culture. They thought they could win a national championship.
Respect. So
here we go.
There you go.
Wow.
It's good to have a mission. It's like Team Bitcoin.
Another thing I did over break, I observed what many people do. They sort of, it's a reset, a mental reset, and look back in the past year, look forward to the new year. What do you do? You set New Year's resolutions, right?
So that's a good, good question.
I went through that process and I think DK wanted me to speak to some of the stuff I'm doing.
Yeah, let's hear
it. It's actually...
We chatted on the like high level. Some ideas came up, but I wanted to hear actually more about what actually motivated this and how it's going and what you actually hope to achieve with these.
Yeah, well, a lot of it is stuff I think Max is already doing. So interested to hear what your thought. But I just sort of I wanted to like a reset on how I spend my time.
Yeah.
I mean, so I always have physical goals, like running or some race or whatever. So I've got those, you know. I love the Dipsy race now, so I've got a goal there. Those are easy for me because I love doing them. So it's not like hard to do that goal.
Yeah.
One that is physical related that is a little bit harder is mobility because I'm not a huge fan of like stretching and even yoga. I mean, I don't hate yoga, but I don't get drawn to it like I do biking or cycling or biking or running. But yeah, I introduced a mobility goal, but I think the goals that you're interested in talking about in the show are more around like digital habits, internet habits, et cetera. So I really tried to account for my time better looking back, and then made some changes. So I know, Max, you've talked about like deleting apps from your phone, getting away from the feed, et cetera. So I haven't deleted an app from my phone, but that's not true. I actually went through every app on my phone and deleted about 70 apps that I don't use anymore.
70? Holy
moly. It was just apps that I don't use. But that was more just like standard house cleaning, not behavioral changes. But like X in particular, I get sucked into it like many people in Bitcoin do. I actually never used Twitter that much at all until I got into Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I mean, I was one of the first users on Twitter, but like I just didn't really use it that much.
Yeah.
Bitcoin drew me into that. I was a very regular user, and then like news and politics, etc., you get sucked in. I learned a lot. I mean, it's an amazing tool, and it's like a professional tool for me.
Yeah.
So it's not as easy as, and also I get links sent to me constantly, and of course I'm also an instigator of sending links, right? Yes. So it's not practical to just say no to it. I don't think it actually would like harm how I'm productive at work, including the show, but Bitcoin development, et cetera, Bitcoin sentiment, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So I can't just cut it off, but I basically am saying no to like feed scrolling, which I think is something you've done. So I wasn't sure how it would work out though, because if it's not as simple as like deleting the app and literally not logging in, then how do you not get sucked in? You have to be disciplined and tough and mentally tough, right? So 10 days into this, I have been mentally tough. I've not been scrolling. So let's keep checking back in every month or two how I'm doing, because I worry about slipping, but I don't want to slip.
Well, I feel like
it's easier now than it was 5 days ago.
It's been surprisingly pretty easy every day.
You said it's mentally tough. Like, is that mental toughness? Like, are you sort of swinging?
Well, I anticipated you need mental toughness just because it's the product is designed to suck you in. Yeah. Right? So, I mean, like, Max sends a link, I click, and even my intention is just to look at that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, then you want to look at you want to look at replies to understand context. And that's, for me, still within bounds.
Yeah.
And then I might want to look at quote tweets to look at context. And that's still within bounds. But then
you get notifications.
You inevitably get sucked into the feed itself. And then, and so I anticipate that be difficult to avoid. So far, so good, though. But I'm not letting my guard down. Like, I think that's going to continue to be hard to resist. But
so, I mean, first of all, congratulations. I think that's awesome. And to be clear, like, even though I've tried this, like, to be clear, I have not found a permanent solution. I like sometimes am doing really well with it and sometimes slip and I'm like, God damn it, not again. So I do think having the intention and the willpower is a great place to start. And it's awesome. But I'm also very skeptical of willpower for the very long run. So I don't know what the answer is. I'm curious what you guys think. I mean, I think, obviously you keep that going as long as you can. I mean, some things that I've tried that have helped, obviously getting rid of the app, trying to only use it on my computer. But even still, it's like occasionally it's like, oh, I just want to check real quick. Like you said, the context, 20 fucking minutes later, you're like, God damn it, not again. Mm-hmm. And it's a constant, like I haven't found a good solution. But I'm also with you where it's like, I have considered, do I just like, I talked with Angela about just change my password, don't tell me. And maybe that's a good solution for like just doing it for a month. But then like to your point, like, yeah, there is stuff that like is I would like to be able to check. So, I mean, one thing that I love in the far future, maybe not so far, is with something like Noster, in theory, you could just create an app that's like, listen, I don't want the fucking feed at all. All I want is to be able to see this thing that someone sends me in the context, literally nothing else. Twitter or any of these closed proprietary platforms, of course, it's hard because they limit the API access. So I don't know what the long-term answer is. I mean, I don't know. DK, do you have any thoughts on this? I know you've experimented with your own, or maybe people in the audience. Like, I think this is a struggle for everyone.
I do a ton of experimentation around this. One thing that I've also been trying to reduce turning my attention over to an algorithm. So if Steve or you, Max, send me a link, I'm just because it happens to be hosted on Twitter, I'm like, yeah, great, I'll read that. I generally am fine just reading that and then closing it. So I kind of just have some ability or habit to do that. But I have moved Twitter away to the back, you know, several pages back so that it's not easily accessible. It's something that I can like go to and I can click on a link that you send me in Signal and I can read it on Twitter, but then I can kind of be done with it. The one thing I've done is I was never really much of a big Reddit person. I don't like love Reddit. It's like fine. But what I have done, which is weird, but what I have done is I've added Reddit to my main home page of my phone. And so when I kind of have that instinct like, oh, I want to see what's going on. I want to understand the world a little bit more. I actually just open Reddit and I look a little bit and I'm like, okay, that's enough. Yeah. And it sort of gives me some of that same like curiosity satisfaction, but it's not tuned to like quite the same, I don't know, like, you know, quite the same rage inducing attempts that Twitter tries to. The information is overall, I'd say, lower quality, less interesting, but in a sense, it gives, it's like drinking Diet Coke maybe instead of Coke. It's not water, but it's like a lighter version.
Yeah. I mean, I find Stacker News is like that, right? For me, like that's what I've done. And I actually like, Reddit's not perfect. I can still get sucked into Reddit, but it's way less likely than Twitter because it's not like there's a billion fucking things. Like, look at this incendiary. And there are really good deep threads on Reddit. For example, there was one, I think I sent you guys over the break on Reddit Singularity around like, that basically some dude who was just kind of like, oh man, like the singularity actually is here. And it was like, it was a great post. I loved it. And I agree with you on that. It's still, I think it's a good stopgap. It's not my perfect one. Matthew also mentioned deleting the apps using browser. I do the browser. I keep my phone black and white. That's another one that really helps me. But I don't know, man. Part of me is just like, I wonder if the answer is going to be, you know, in this new AI wave where when I finally get my assistant, you know, like that I own, DK and I were having a bit of an AI debate. We'll bring back in a minute. But if I get that assistant, it's like, I don't want to see anything. Like literally all I want to do is tell me what I need to know. And if I decide I want to go in deeper context, we'll do that together. But that's it. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've thought about doing it wouldn't probably be a large scale type of service, but for myself, I can imagine I've thought about building something like a Chrome extension that sits on my computer and reads everything that comes in on Twitter and then kind of operates according to some like filter that I set. I say, if it's really angry stuff, don't show it to me. If it's something interesting and kind of brings forward some new knowledge or learning about a topic I care about, then show me that. And then have that Chrome extension do the reading, digestion, and filtering. And then I build like some reading interface where I can read the stuff that the Chrome extension has filtered for me. So I've thought about building that.
I would use that.
Get around to it in the new year.
Yeah, I'd be interested to try that if you do.
Yeah.
A few more things that I'm trying to improve. Yeah. Well, the one that I mentioned that I think is why DK suggested talking about on the show is I'm in like dozens of Discord servers because a lot of the open source Bitcoin projects are on Discord servers. So, you know,
a new one soon, right?
You're right. I mean, we can't have enough Discord servers. So, I mean, I need to be at least lurking, if not participating in many, if not most of these, just part of my job.
Yeah.
But, my default behavior though was like notifications on, and I'm just like instinctively like an index zero type person, so I just want to like clean it out right away. So editing how I get a notification, I look at the message and then deal with it, either consume it and move on, or respond, or queue it up for if it's not an instant response or I need to think about it more, queue it up for later. The number of Discord servers grew from like 1 to 6 to 12 to literally I probably have 25 or 30 now.
Yeah, wow.
So it becomes, it just was consuming my day.
Yeah.
You leave notice on for all that?
Well, I turned off notice for maybe, out of those like 30 Discord servers, maybe like 6 or 8 are defunct or not really used anymore, like ABC.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah. that was one of DK's. I had already turned up muted notifications for like 6 or 8. But yeah, I was getting, you know, it was a big part of my interactions during the day. So I've turned off muted notifications
That's
for
awesome.
Almost all, but a couple.
Yeah.
And just creating a practice of like checking like twice a week, mm-hmm. and like, you know, batching it basically.
Batching, yes, batching.
And then it's so much more efficient.
Yeah.
So, again, just started that, but I think I'll be able to stick to that. That's not a hard habit to create. That was just, I needed to like step back, realize it, and then do it. And so did that. Another one, I created a new rule. I cannot bring my phone into the bedroom at night. So like,
but how do you wake up? Like, do you have an analog alarm clock, or you just,
I still use my phone. It's outside my room and I hear it. So, and if somehow that's not working, I'll just get a alarm clock,
old school,
or an old phone or whatever. Yeah. And like, but basically, you know, no more falling asleep to like scrolling through Instagram reels or, you know, whatever. No more waking up in the middle of the night and then like grabbing my phone and getting sucked into messages and waking me up.
Oh, that's, again,
maybe
good.
For like an hour or more. Right. And so that's been super healthy so far.
Congrats.
Hasn't been really that hard. It feels a little weird now to go to bed without my phone, but I go to sleep right away. Yeah. So I'm happy about that. I'm not like sitting there awake for hours.
Nice.
That's why fitness helps, because if you get tired from working out, then you your body tends to want to go to sleep. So, and several other changes like that. But I think so far so good. And then the main one I'm worried about that I'll slip up on is the doom scrolling. So we can keep checking in with each other every once in a while to make sure I stay disciplined on that.
Nice. Well, first of all, congratulations. Those are all great things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would just say we should definitely all continue. I think it's great to have community to check in with people on. But I think on the doom scrolling thing, I think we need a better solution as a group, as a society. Yeah. And DK, I don't know, maybe your vibe coder thing is a step in the right direction. I don't know. But willpower is a great start. But I really believe we need a some structural solution.
Yeah, I agree. A few people are chiming in here on comments. So
by the way, I can see comments through this. So
okay. Wally. So Matt Coate says that we use a quote freedom app. I don't know what that app is, but basically he blocks out, sounds like, you know, notification stuff in the morning or during work hours or whatever. And totally agree with that. And that, I mean, that's aligned with what I'm trying to do as well. Just be interrupted less during the workday. Yeah. One thing for me, like a lot of my role is responding to people right away, connecting people, unblocking things. So it's a little, I mean, there's a cost to me, like just blocking everyone out for a day or 2 days at a time, because then they might be, people don't necessarily wait on me, but like I can reduce friction or I can unblock things.
Right.
So there is, and that's typical for a PM. So I think that is attention, but still I'm like way too far on one end of that spectrum. So blocking out time makes a lot of sense. Also people were talking about why the show was late and I was getting blamed, which I just wanted to comment on that. I will take responsibility. However, I blame Elon, first of all, because I was at the Tesla service center.
We can blame Elon for everything, right?
And they told me the car would be done at 10:30, and then it wasn't done at 10:30. And then I checked in again, and they're like, oh, we'll definitely have it done by 11:30. I'm like, I have to be in the studio. And then 11:30 rolls around, and it's still not ready. And they never did. It's still not ready. So I had to Uber here. I'm going to point the plane. So then I show up 15 minutes late, and then someone has to take bathroom break.
Hey, man.
We know who that someone
whenever
is.
I can empty my bladder, I'm going to take that opportunity. As I learned growing up, quote, never miss
that
an opportunity.
Recording of you taking that opportunity on many occasions.
That's what I do, baby. Too much tea. Pounding tea. That's my thing. But
yeah.
So wait, but you mean to tell me the Tesla mechanic was not sensitive to the fact that you're a star and had to be in the studio?
I'm like, take your time. I don't want to rush to the top of my car. I just wanted to know, like, do I need to take an Uber? And they kept saying, no, your car will be ready. And I'm like, oh yeah.
And also Uber, like, don't they have like Tesla like robotaxi ready?
Yeah.
Seriously. Not here.
Not outside of San Francisco.
Okay.
I think all cars drive themselves as of 2018 or something.
Well, I do generally drive my car in self-driving mode, and it's fantastic, but
yeah,
it's in the shop because the camera's not calibrated. And so I've actually not had self-driving the last 2 weeks, and it drives me crazy. Yeah. Like it once you get acclimated to it, it feels like you're a century behind when you go back and you actually have to drive your car.
I see your ill-fated attempt to dunk on Elon, DK. And sorry, that's not it. For stealing our attention, sure, but
with that same service center, I would say I'm balanced. Like, I'm not a hater. I own a Tesla, but I don't. But man, that service center.
I'm sorry to question this thesis from DK. I'm not a hater. I just hate on Elon.
I bought the car. I like the car. It's a good car.
Yeah.
But right. But man, the service center.
So Matt Newell says, did I tell Tesla that we have 7 viewers on YouTube? And that's a funny comment. I love it. But I did not.
Yeah.
However, I will say I interviewed a candidate for a job this morning and they told me they love PBJ and are an avid watcher. So
let's go.
As you would say if you were interviewing for a job.
Yeah.
He might be listening right now. So
this is like that one time Steve was telling us something. He was like, hey guys, you're not going to believe this, but everyone on my team agrees. I was like, okay.
Who's signing those checks?
Anyhow.
Okay.
Good times.
Okay. Should we get to some of the news?
Yeah.
Well,
I think a pretty quick and easy one would be Walmart. You want to start with Walmart? Because the news sounded exciting. Walmart accepts Bitcoin now.
Okay.
I mean, they're the biggest retailer in the US.
Yeah.
Big deal. But
what does it really mean?
Well, we'll talk about that. But I came up with a new litmus test too. What it means to like, or whether something's whether an announcement is interesting or not.
Okay. If it matters.
And so accepting Bitcoin, like it's the litmus test is, can you use any Bitcoin wallet to pay?
That's a good one.
Or at least any like, you know, Bolt 11 or Lightning based Bitcoin wallet.
Most
Bitcoin wallets, right? Yeah. That and is the answer yes or no? Well, in the case of Walmart, the answer is no. You can only pay with OnePay, which is their own company, or it's like a subsidiary or something.
Yeah.
App. And even that doesn't even use the Bitcoin network or Lightning network or anything. It's just you literally have to buy Bitcoin in OnePay. Mm-hmm. And then when you go to Walmart and buy something, they sell your Bitcoin, turn it in dollars, and then pay Walmart.
So there's literally nothing to do with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I mean,
other than
they buy and sell it.
Buying and selling Bitcoin through NiceHash.
Okay.
Because they're partnered with NiceHash.
Okay. But they're not using Bitcoin in any way, shape, or form in the transaction. So literally all they're doing is they're saying, over here, you trust us to buy and sell Bitcoin for you. When we sell it, we'll take dollars and pay dollars on the other end.
Yeah. So
I'm not a fan of this approach, but I do want to sort of steelman the benefits to Bitcoin that this creates, which is, There are people out there who are Walmart customers who have this OnePay app and who don't have a Coinbase account or don't have any other process right now that has them convenient exposure to Bitcoin. And so they may become a little more curious about Bitcoin if they can hold it, see some price exposure in the app, and then they can pay smaller amounts from what they had originally put in because they saw the price appreciate. I wouldn't defend it as good. I'm still sort of on your side. Like, this is kind of like a toothless announcement. But just to sort of like, I think there's some good in it still.
Well, I think the good is rather obvious. Like, it's an exchange. Like now more people that have a Walmart app can buy Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Also note that I didn't say it was bad.
Yeah.
My litmus test is for interesting.
So I don't
think it's that interesting of news.
Mm. I don't think it hurts Bitcoin. I think it helps Bitcoin, but it doesn't really enable Bitcoin payments in any interesting way.
Well, it's just mislabeled. Like the news is just mislabeled. Like a better announcement would be Walmart's payment app allows you to buy Bitcoin.
and then quote spend it at Walmart.
Now one question I do have on the spend thing that makes this slightly more interesting is, do they handle all of the like theoretical tax stuff for you? Because
that's actually
jeez, nobody ever told me they were theoretical.
no comment.
I just filled out Alex's Presidio Bitcoin survey for members.
I didn't see that yet.
Oh, you should. It's fun.
Yeah.
Alex came up with,
by the way,
a lot of fun questions.
If it's in the Discord, I don't check Discord at all. So, as you know, and now you understand why.
Well, a couple of things. So first of all, awesome survey, tons of categories for members, but one of them is like, I forget like who's most likely to be audited by the IRS, I think is one of them. So now I'm going to change my answer from DK to Max.
Bro.
Why was I?
It's certainly me. I'm staying with DK.
What did I do? Look at him trying to defend.
Hey, man. Anyhow.
Anything shady?
By the way,
Whoopi. I don't know.
Another reason to check the Presidio Bitcoin member Discord is we have AMAs now.
Well, to be fair,
Jack Dorsey.
You told me about that. Yeah, I knew if it was important enough, you would message me.
Dorsey swung by yesterday.
That was dope.
And we did a AMA with him with members of Presidio Bitcoin. I thought it went really well. Good vibe. It wasn't, I mean, he was asking questions of people here, and I thought it was good. It was more of a dialogue.
It was.
Off the record, but I wasn't there. Is there anything you can share about like interesting topics that maybe hadn't?
I don't think he would have any issue.
Whedon.
Yeah. Well, okay. So before we jump at that, because I have a lot of thoughts on that, I guess a question for you, because Steve made that happen, which was awesome. Thank you for doing that. It was super cool. What inspired you? Like, you've never been like, hey, we're doing an AMA before. And then you're just like, yo, come on first.
Like a lot of initiatives, I start very serendipitous, random.
Yeah.
Like we think of things on this show, like Builder. And then now we have a monthly Builder meetup that's spread to 5 cities around the world. Right. Yeah. So, Jack had let me know that he's going to visit San Francisco, this week. And I'm like, oh, what's a good reason for him to swing by Presidio Bitcoin? He'd already been on Haley's 21 and 21 show. So probably not do that again. And I know that he likes to do AMAs.
Yeah.
So I felt he'd be comfortable with that format.
Yeah.
So I suggested, hey, you want to swing by and do an AMA with, and we'll just do members. And we had about 20 people.
Yeah.
So it was like cool. the right amount of people. It was, still intimate and everyone got to speak and, everyone got to introduce themselves. So he got to know who he's chatting with. He said yes. And then we did it. But then, cool. We chatted with Alex and people here, and like, we're going to try to do this more regularly. Like,
I loved it.
And it doesn't have to be like, people as prominent as Jack, but just like we want interesting people here, people we can learn from.
Yeah.
Hopefully we create a cadence where we have folks coming through here at least once a quarter, if not even more frequently for AMAs.
I loved it. And it was super cool because, and I was wondering where the hell was DK. Now I understand you're out of town, but this was very, very sweet. One thing that I liked about it was, I guess because it was off the record and small. I don't know. I mean, like Jack is like, seems like he's always an open guy, but I don't know. Like this was the most candid I've ever heard him yesterday. And it was, I don't know. Like I certainly asked questions I thought were maybe, probably wouldn't get asked on an investor day at Block and expect an answer from. And he gave a lot of just like super frank answers, which I thought was super cool. So, I mean, shocked Jack continues to be a cool guy, but yeah, it was great.
Yep. I mean, to me, it's not surprising because I've interacted with them a lot for 6 years now. But yeah, I mean, to
I'm at that tongue.
Most people in the room like don't have that access or whatever. But yeah, he's very, he's super authentic and he's very, he does not equivocate. Like what he says one place, he'll say that another place, he'll say in public, he'll say to investors, he'll say to a group of Bitcoiners. So
yeah,
I always, I appreciate that.
Any big takeaways from the AMA or anything that like, I don't know, captured your fancy?
I don't know. I'd turn it on to you.
I mean, I thought a couple of things. And again, I don't know if there's anything you shouldn't say, but I think a couple of things that stuck out to me. One, it's interesting to hear Jack thinking about AI and AGI. It was like, we knew he was already a fan of Demis and Google. He's a big Demis guy, which I thought was cool. And I don't think that's a surprise. He's retweeted him and stuff. I think it was interesting, he was very open and candid about, frankly, like as all in, and excited as I am about Bitcoin, I do think it's important to recognize kind of, and I don't say this necessarily all in a negative way, but the black swan risk, because it's not necessarily bad, because there's, white swan risk here too. But like, you know, apparently Demis's position on Bitcoin has kind of been, it's not necessary post AGI. And I don't fully agree with that. Sounds like Jack doesn't fully agree with that. We all think that there's probably going to be market of intelligence and lots of different kind of intelligences that emerge. But I also am open to this idea that, like, I don't know, like, I think it's good to keep a certain amount of humility and open-mindedness. Like, we could be wrong on certain things. There are changes that happen in the world. And, like, you know, if in the future, you know, if you're super AGI-pilled, and by the way, I am only more and more AGI-pilled as the time goes on. And the reason is because everyone's like, oh, you know, is it a bubble? It ain't no bubble. We haven't even seen the gigawatt cluster runs yet, bro. Like, we're still at the hundreds of megawatt cluster runs. Everyone's like, well, you know, and like, even if there is a little bubble like the internet, it's going to be a blip, like a blip. Yep. And so if you're really scaling law-pilled and all this improvement we've seen, you know, in the last like 2 or 3 years, whatever it's been, is without the base model runs at the gigawatt cluster run. I don't think people get that. Like, we've seen all of this improvement with post-training stuff, with reasoning, inference time compute. It's without going from the 100 megawatt scale to the gigawatt scale clusters.
But we still might, it might, once energy is no longer, we might find that it's no longer the bottleneck.
Yes.
And I have no idea. But like, it doesn't necessarily keep scaling with as energy scales.
It doesn't necessarily, but one, this is like...
It meaning like the current techniques.
Sure.
We might have to find new techniques, which might take another 10 or 20 years.
We might, but my kind of take on this, and if people want to see my like little talk from the Type 1 Summit, I gave a 12-minute talk with a meme that I need to refine that meme. I'm very proud. This is one of the memes. And by the way, if I ever get into Round of Replit and like doing vibe coding and Nick and Matt one day, I want the meme generator. But the meme is basically, you know, the curve, the bell curve, where it's like, the dude on the left is like, just trust the curve. The dude on the right is like, just trust the curve. And then the dude in the middle is like, no, this won't work. It's like, I'm probably the dude on the left. Exactly. I'm probably the dude on the left, but I'm like, look, man, like zoom out even beyond, you know, the current architectures like transformers. If you go back to Hans Moravec in the 70s, Hans Moravec is just like the energy and compute theory of everything. And like, yes, there were many breakthroughs that happened, you know, since he made his observations in the 70s, like we had to figure out LLMs, we had to figure out transformers. But this is where I guess I get a little woo-woo, and like, I don't mind being woo-woo. It's like, I just think that's God, the universe, whatever you want to call it. And like, that's how it manifests. The breakthroughs will happen. And a lot of like pure materialist rationalists, like, that's impossible. I'm like, cool. I mean, you can express that thesis as you wish. I'm going to express my thesis based on my woo-woo views. But like, the breakthroughs keep happening. It's the same with Moore's Law. Like, why did Moore's Law curve keep happening? It just kept happening. And it was like, well, but we may not get the engineer, but they happened. Anyways, so my point is, that's a much longer conversation, but the broader point is something I'm having more humility about, as much as I think that Bitcoin matters as energy-backed currency for these agents, is, you know, many orders of magnitude beyond where we are in terms of compute. That's the singularity. And, you know, beyond that, like, there is a world where these intelligences, maybe they don't even use our old protocols. Maybe they don't use TCP/IP. Maybe they don't need the web. Maybe they don't need any of the stuff that we, it's like, we're like cavemen swinging sticks and we're trying to guess what it's going to look like. I think given the information we have on the ground today, and given, you know, sort of my belief that energy, that Bitcoin is energy money, you know, we have not figured out ways to break the, like, you know, the fundamental laws of thermodynamics. Okay. So as long as we have that, I think Bitcoin is going to be really relevant for these agents. That's clearly where I would put my, you know, money metaphorically and realistically. However, I also don't rule out the possibility that these guys might find new laws of physics and stuff that we just, I mean, we were like little monkeys and we didn't know. Anyway, so it was interesting to me to hear Jack be certainly not bearish on Bitcoin, but at least also open this idea of like, I mean, at that point, once we go through this singularity, it's like, we don't know.
Yeah, I think the time frame matters really. So like, if you know that AGI is guaranteed happening in, you know, 18 months, then I could be more agreeable that let's not waste our time with Bitcoin. If it's 10 or 20 years and there's a bit of a slow takeoff or other big technological changes that need to happen before we get there, then like, you kind of want to be able to marshal resources. And effectively, money is just like the allocation of resources, right? It's like a ledger to allocate resources.
Yes.
Whether it's energy backed, I mean, the only real one is the energy backed one, but like what we're trying to do whenever we create fiat monies, even, is we're trying to allocate resources better.
And, so and critically, scarce resources.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If the resource is not scarce, too cheap to meter, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. So I think the negative, the sort of bear case on Bitcoin would be that all resources and all energy and needs become too cheap to matter. And I think there's like a reasonable shot that that happens at some point.
Yeah.
But it's probably not like in 18 months, right?
Steve disagrees.
I don't agree because like human nature is to like there'll be artificial scarcity in the sense that like part of like your identity, like whether it's through fashion or the type of car you drive, or you're always looking for some kind of unique edge to like demonstrate your personality. So if literally everything is infinite, I mean, even like the friends you have, like social groups, mm-hmm. or your girlfriend or wife or spouse or whatever, like that's scarce.
Right?
So, I don't see, I mean, I definitely see a world where things that have been costly before become effectively no cost and abundant for sure, but not everything.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, as long as we're in this finite dimension, I tend to agree. But I guess what I'm saying is like my like whatever 99% cases, I agree with you, and that's probably what's going to happen. But I increasingly leave open the possibility of just being shocked.
One more thing that we talked about at the AMA was, you know, the digital gold store value narrative just being the dominant narrative. We talked about it in this show a lot. I mean, this isn't like a shocking statement, but, you know, Jack did say that he feels like Bitcoin as a everyday money payments is headed in the wrong direction over time. Yeah. Like it's not getting better over time. It's getting worse over time. Worse in terms.
How is it getting worse?
Narrative, mindshare, usage.
I mean, MDK. I mean, it's small and early, but like that kind of stuff seems to be.
I mean, and we're going to talk about MDK. I mean, obviously, yes, the three of us are advocates, but
not just advocates. Yeah. You built something, Steve.
David, how much money in the world is allocated towards Bitcoin as store of value versus MDK? How many people in the world?
Wait, so are you sad that more people are using store of value now?
No, it's just
that's progress. That's just a form of progress.
No, this is not a hate on the store of value narrative. It's just that the store of value narrative is the dominant narrative and continues to grow in dominance over time, even today.
I would maybe frame it as for the people that even give a shit about Bitcoin. Over time, the narrative has grown more and more. In the early days, it was purely, this is going to be what Satoshi said, peer-to-peer cash.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, it has grown more and more to, this is a store of value of the people that care. Doesn't mean that's not going to change over time.
But I think that's mostly because way more people care now.
That's fair.
Like, there's a huge frontier of new people who care, and they only care for store of value, and they only care for a number go up. But the absolute number of humans who are engaged in payments today, that must be higher than it was 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm actually not sure on that because it's still
from 6 to 8.
Is that true? I mean, I'm serious.
That might be true. And even if it is true, it's tiny numbers.
Yeah, it's tiny.
Regardless,
of the payment era of Bitcoin payments.
So I think that's going to bridge us soon to two very well. Freudian slip there, I guess, but I'm going to get at it. I think it's going to bridge us very soon to talking about both MDK and this kind of like the new Sailor-backed stablecoin stuff, which I've been thinking a lot about. But another maybe way I would frame this is of people that care at all in like technology circles, I would say probably in the 2011, 2012, 2013 era, I was not around, but my understanding is VCs were backing things like BitPay. And they were thinking this is a peer-to-peer payment technology. Today, if you survey, and I would assume that a lot of like call it normie VCs were at least open to this idea of like, oh yeah, Bitcoin, it's that internet payment thing. Whereas all those companies effectively, you know, have been duds or, you know, zeros are pretty small. And now companies in the traditional tech circles that are seen as peer-to-peer payment or like the internet payments are companies like Bridge, which get acquired by Stripe for $1 billion. And so I would say in sort of mainstream tech circles, Bitcoin maybe had a moment where people saw it as payment technology. That transitioned to stable coins, which the volume for that is real. And yeah, at least in the quote unquote, you know, Silicon Valley talk, that's probably the transition.
I would sort of, I would severely diminish the importance of like,
yeah, I agree.
Like what's worth investing in or whatever. It's more like, what are people actually using?
Using, sure.
And like, and,
well, and people are using stable coins at a much larger rate for payments.
Oh, right? Yeah. I'm not saying that Bitcoin payments is beating stable coins. I'm saying that Bitcoin payments, we may be at the dawn of Bitcoin payments. And one piece of evidence I would bring is, I think it was at the Vegas conference, wasn't Miles up on stage saying that doesn't Block generate 10% return on liquidity from Lightning channels and stuff? I mean,
that's
usage, right? How,
but again, so again, what I'm saying, what Max is saying, and I think, I mean, it's not like Jack turned bearish. I mean, he is a very much bullish and an advocate for Bitcoin payments.
Sure, yeah.
And also, yeah, we talk about all kinds of things on the show. We're going to talk about more things today on the show about reasons to be optimistic, and we are at the dawn. But I think it's undebatable that to date, it's losing.
No,
it's losing to stable coins. It's losing to the store value narrative.
Relative to what it was 10 years ago. Are there more Bitcoin payments made today than there were 10 years ago?
I think you're both right. It's true. Like, yes, it is certainly. Well, again, the Silk Road thing, we'd have to go check those numbers.
Hold on. Like, if let's just simplify it. Let's say there's, you know, stable coins and Bitcoin payments. And 10 years ago, Bitcoin payments was at 5 and stablecoin is 0. And today, Bitcoin payments are at 6. And stablecoin payments are at a billion. Well, yeah. Did Bitcoin payments grow? Yes. But I mean,
yeah.
But I
don't even see the argument here.
But I wouldn't claim that stablecoins are not used. They're used way many orders of magnitude more than Bitcoin payments. So I think we're all on the same page with that. My point is, I think that Bitcoin payments is the long-term way that the payments stuff is going to work. And there's going to be some, maybe, you know, multi-year transitional period where people try to do stuff with stablecoins, they get kind of borked in one way or another, and then they've probably come around, or maybe there's new technologies that come around that enable people to use Bitcoin payments like stablecoins.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any of us are disagreeing at our core. I mean, I think a lot of it just comes down to expectation reality. Like, if you came into the Bitcoin project with the idea that we're going to get Bitcoin peer-to-peer payments from day zero, you're probably very disappointed.
Right.
If you came into the Bitcoin project saying money has to go through, you know, collectible, store value, medium of exchange, unit of account, and you can maybe on the margins push things a little bit faster or slower, but like ultimately nature is going to nature, and like it is what it is. And like, we're going through the progression, and like, here we are. I mean, I will say from my perspective as a VC who has bet heavily on the Lightning Network for payments, there's no question it's been disappointing that it's gone slower than I thought it was going to go in 2017 or 2021. No question.
Or our 2025 predictions.
Yeah, our 2025 predictions, which were just like miss after miss. So there's no question my expectation was incorrect in how quickly it would happen. Am I less confident that it's going to happen today? No. I mean, I still think more than ever in the long run, there's so many reasons Bitcoin is permissionless. It's energy backed. It has all of these properties. And in fact, you know, I've been thinking a lot more about, and somebody else want to discuss this compute marketplace idea and agents using it. Like ultimately, without doxing, because he doesn't want to come out yet, but like someone very smart said something that just stuck in my head. It's like, it's not that agents or people prefer Bitcoin. They're going to choose Bitcoin for payments because like, oh yes, I've done a long, careful analysis and this is better than that. It's going to be like, what's going to happen is stablecoins are going to win until they don't. And they're not, and when do they not win? Whenever there's like a big reason they stop working. It's like, it works until someone.
This is my point. Stuff. This is why if Bitcoin payments is a 5 today, and or was a 5 10 years ago, and it's a 6 today, but stablecoins is, what did you say, 1,000 or a billion or whatever? Like, that's great because stablecoins are a transitional technology that will help people, you know, use digital technologies in somewhat cryptographically, somewhat secured, you know, debatably secured.
Now, I do think the spirit of what Jack was saying, though, is also important, which, and something I've also thought about it, he mentioned that a movie he likes a lot, which I actually now want to rewatch, was WALL-E. And I think that's important, too, because I think that, you know, to go back to one of our mutual favorite thinkers, Kevin Kelly, like, there are certain technological things that are inevitable. And I think on a long enough time horizon, there are even, like, characteristics of those technologies that are inevitable. However, there are flavors of those technologies that can be birthed at different moments. For example, mm-hmm. a hive mind is inevitable. That's why my fund is called Hivemind. There is a bottoms-up version, which I think Bitcoin and technologies like Nostr represent. And there is a top-down version, which is more of like what we see in countries like China. They're both hive minds, but they're different characters of hive mind. I have my beliefs on what ultimately will win. But like, as I've learned, and one thing I need to be more, I think, humble about is I've just been really wrong on timeframes. And that's okay. Like, it is what it is. As long as you're patient enough, like, you know.
Everything eventually happens, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Literally everything. But well, that's a different conversation. But I think what he was kind of getting at, which is fair, is like it does appear that we are, and not just on Bitcoin payments, but like, you know, as we discuss with the X and the attention thievery, that whatever you want to call it, sadly, it appears that society is, from his perspective, and I would tend to agree with this, moving more towards a WALL-E world where people are sitting there fat, slurping their whatever, glued into a seat and not. And I think his point was like these freedom technologies, even if, you know, eventually they win, it would kind of suck if we go through a generation of that. If there was the possibility that some people could break away and tap people on the shoulder to remind them like, hey, you don't have to strap in. You could go live.
And I just wanted to bring. So my takeaway from Jack saying that wasn't like, oh, I'm going to stop working on Bitcoin payments. We've lost. It was more like, well, Spiral is all about Bitcoin payments, and Presidio Bitcoin, a big thrust within Presidio Bitcoin and the show and what we talk about is Bitcoin payments.
Yes.
So it's not like the things I've been affiliated with and work on haven't been trying to move the needle here. But my takeaway is like, we need to double down. And not only on the software development and product development and things like that, but also just the message, and double down on the message. And fight the narrative. And that does, to me, that doesn't mean like shit on the store value narrative. I totally believe in the store value narrative. So it's not like it has to replace.
And I think it's an attractive step one for a lot of people, especially today.
Yeah. So no, I'm fully on board with store value, fully on board with the what you mentioned, Max, about, you know, collectible to store value to media exchange unit account over a long period of time. And also a lot of it being just a timeline we can't influence greatly.
Yep.
But I do think we can influence it.
Yeah.
We can accelerate it.
Yeah.
Otherwise I wouldn't
be here. Yeah.
I wouldn't do what I'm doing. Because it would be a complete waste of time. So maybe it is, I don't know. But I tend to think it's optimizing it. But I do think we need to like double down even more, and things that we can control, you know, we can move the needle,
and also be very strategic, not just work harder, but also like be very strategic about thinking like, where does Bitcoin payments solve a problem? And so I think maybe this is a good transition point, which is MDK.
Yeah. And I think Nick's listening, who founded Money Dev Kit.
Yeah.
So many things to talk about here that I
actually
said
I was going to say, Steve, can I think you did maybe, I don't know, it was one of your first production vibe coding projects.
Yeah.
You may have done some other ones before. That's maybe a nice, can you share that? And then we can sort of talk about what you learned through that. Cause it's kind of relevant to the tee up of the title and stuff.
Sure. I've begun three different simple projects using MDK. My goal was to use MDK, and like, cause Nick's tweeting and marketing that like you can one shot it super easy and there's Replit optimizations, and I'm like, I believe that, but I want to see it for real, try it myself. So I tried like a casino, like, you know, spin a wheel, pay Bitcoin, spin a wheel, and then win, you know, either win or lose.
Gambling always. Yeah.
And that got put on pause because MDK doesn't yet support payouts, but in the future, I think in the near future it will. So I paused that. Then I turned to creating a simple joke. It's called Joke Box. You know, you pay to get a joke. This was not some like incredible feat by me. Literally, Replit figured out the theme, the name, everything for me.
Oh, really? What was your problem? Because by the way, so Steve has a side hustle now, because I believe both DK and I purchased a joke. So he's already getting quite.
I think it's doing quite well. Yeah.
He's doing numbers from what
I'm doing numbers.
I think
I'm one of the top revenue generators of MPKs.
Are you serious? How many jokes? Nick, can you tell us how many jokes we got?
Thanks to MPK, it has a very nice dashboard for users. So I can pull up the dashboard. I don't know. I have like a dozen orders or something.
We're just trying to dox your theoretical. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. You're trying to get me audited by the IRS. Even though a lot of these are wash sales, I'm just paying myself. But
see, those are merely suggestions. Taxes are not real, as we learned on the show. Thanks to Max.
Anyhow, so this app, yeah, you are teased with a joke. You have to pay to see the joke. Very simple website. But again, my goal was like, use MPK, get successful payments, see how easy it was to add MPK. And I would say it was overall very good and close to the dream. The problems I encountered were not MPK related. They were my agent trying to get too fancy using MPK. Mm-hmm. So I had to be like extra explicit saying like, follow the MPK docs exactly. Mm-hmm. I had to give it those kind of instructions. And there are some other weird, like, so MPK, it's a self-custody wallet. So I had, my wallet was generated for me. I have the, on client side, I have my 12 words for seed phrase. And I gave that to Replit as part of my app. And then like, it only read 11 of the 12 words. And then it failed. And then as I was debugging it, it's like, well, your seed phrase only has 11 words. And I went back to look at my prompt. Oh, I must have had a copy-paste error. And no. Mm. So these are not MPK related, but still, overall experience, like this is what, these are the types of things people might encounter. So it still was not perfectly seamless.
Yeah.
That said, it was pretty amazing how easily it was to add payments to an application.
Yeah.
And
there's no like hang up or gotcha that says it can't be polished, right? Like any problems you ran into, I think can be fixed and made simple and easy. So it could be
probably. I mean, the 11 words versus 12 words, I don't really see what MDK can do with that.
Sure, but I think between Replit or the underlying models or MDK, some combination of them. This is not like it doesn't need a new breakthrough. We just need to figure out how to get it working.
Yeah. And again, the high level is like it's very easy to add payments to any application now. Two things. Another next step for me, I want to try out other payment solutions to compare, including stablecoins and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and I'll report back once I've done that.
Cool.
And then once I get beyond that exercise, then I just want to turn my attention to applications versus payment, because then all of a sudden, like payments are solved. So now I'm just like, instead of just doing like a joke type of application, actually build something that is more substantial and more meaningful to me and then
layers of payments that are not solved, right? Like you're the developer who has a self-custody wallet and you have users paying the developer, but we don't have like user-to-user payments. You can't vibe code a user-to-user payment at self-custody very well today, can you?
Sorry?
Like if you wanted to let users bet on the outcome of the wheel spin and bet against each other.
Yeah, there's definitely some payment use cases that are not well solved.
But clear, you're talking about peer-to-peer coordination where it's like it leaves one user's wallet and goes directly to the other user's wallet.
Yeah, so that the developer doesn't have to take custody or be responsible for it.
Well, and that's one of the nice features today that we have with, Nostr Wallet Connect is in theory, you could do that in a way where you program or coordinate the payment and take a cut as like a business, but you never touch the money.
Right. And I feel like that, so I'm just sort of saying, I like the optimism that payments are solved, but I'm cautious to claim
that. Let me requalify. So not every payment use case possible, because subscriptions are not solved either. So I mean, not every possible payment use case is solved, but the basic one is solved.
Yeah.
And I can just move on to focusing on applications. It is just like trivial to add payments. And then other payment use cases, payouts, subscriptions, what you guys are discussing are either close or, will come. Yeah. But super excited that MPK exists. It's just nice to just like, just check a box. It's trivial. We don't have to worry about that anymore.
Yeah. And to be clear, I mean, I think it's two things. One, this is the worst MDK will ever be, right? Like, it's a new, brand new startup. So it's just going to keep getting better and better and better. So all these features are going to come. But I would say, you know, to be clear, what I think MDK has really narrowed in on are two critical use cases. One, people that for whatever reason are outside of the traditional payment systems, they can't get Stripe. Okay, that's like most of India. Or for people that do speed. That's my understanding. And Nick or other people, please correct me if you have another thing. But like for people that are in the payment network, why in the payment rails like us, like live in the US, why would you choose MDK over Stripe or anything? Because you don't have to like sit there and create accounts. Is that a reasonable?
It could be. I mean, one reason I want to do this project of trying to try other payment technology is like, what's the dev UX? How easy is it for me to vibe code these other solutions? And so I don't know the answer. I'll report back. But one answer could be the dev UX is poor. But that's probably true for a lot of them, but probably easy to close that gap. Mm-hmm. But it's more, I think what you said is where the gap will not be easy or even possible to close, which is avoiding like registration.
Yeah. And I also think it'd be interesting to see, like, for example, as you start doing agents that are doing lots of things, like imagine I say, hey, I want to test 100 different variations of this, spin them all up now as their own accounts. Maybe one day that'll happen with sub accounts, but that's still tied to a user. Like if you're going to the more and more autonomous that gets, the more it needs to be. Mm-hmm. Like I think speed, ability to have identity not be tied to the old world systems for autonomous agents, and parallelism, like the ability just to spin them all up at once. I guess maybe Stripe can figure that out, but at least for today, I don't think that's possible for each of your agents just to quickly have its own wallet.
I mean, I think the big thing here too is that most of the people are the ones who just aren't on the Rails system. Like if you're a kid in India or like most places in the world, if you're 15 years old, I think you cannot have a Stripe account.
Oh, so let's talk about that. Steve had a good idea on this one.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, I definitely want to talk about it. I had that jotted down, like the call sheet ads I saw, right? Yeah. So we'll talk about that. But real quick before we get to that, I think a notable thing from MDK over the break is that Amjad, who's the CEO, founder and CEO of Replit, quote tweeted one of Nick's tweets about MDK and said positive things. That's exciting. You know, that's not super surprising because MDK took some actions to optimize for Replit, so it's a win for Replit as well. However, I thought the most interesting thing is that Paul Graham then retweeted Amjad, and you know, Paul is obviously like well known in Silicon Valley and great track record, and has been,
especially when it comes to crypto predictions.
Well, but yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that Paul seems like particularly friendly or an advocate of Bitcoin, right?
Right.
But I think what's most notable here, Money Dev Kit doesn't go out of its way to wave the orange flag and make Bitcoin front and center in its marketing and positioning. And if you read through the tweet that Amjad wrote and even Nick did and got retweeted, it doesn't, like, it's not some Bitcoin maxi copy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that's why Paul retweeted. I suspect Paul doesn't even know Bitcoin's behind the scenes.
Yeah, well, shout out to Nick.
He just saw that, oh, permissionless, globally accessible payments for Replit, easy to integrate. And that sounds really, I mean, that is really attractive, and it sounds attractive and great. So I think that is a win for MDK positioning, marketing, and others in Bitcoin can probably learn from that.
Yeah. And I honestly think that's
go ahead.
No, please.
I was going to say, I think that's an idea that is worth really re-emphasizing both in Bitcoin and I think in Nostr as well. But these are more like enabling technologies. They're more like infrastructure technologies that let us build new experience, let us build new applications, let us build MDK is a new piece of infrastructure.
Amen.
But like when you look at the way Nick talks about MDK in his videos, he almost doesn't mention Bitcoin much. It's just like under, you know, behind the scenes, right? When you look at BitChat, right? It's not a Nostr client. It's just a client that helps you do a thing, but sometimes uses the Nostr infrastructure when necessary. And we've been talking, you know, Steve and I and another friend have been talking on a private group chat about like a prediction market idea. And we've talked about how
Thanks
you could build a prediction market. This is our super secret. The real PBJ chat. This is the title of the chat.
You don't even know one note I got going on. I'm also working with some people on some chats.
You and Diddy have your own little group chat. But like a prediction market that can write and publish things to and from Nostr to help kind of manage the information around the prediction market. But it doesn't have to be a Nostr app. It can just be like a prediction market, right?
Totally. And by the way,
anybody building in this space should be thinking about how to de-emphasize the technology choice and emphasize the user value in the application.
100%. And like, this is another point Jack made. He was like, if Nostr, we talked about Nostr a little bit. Bob asked specifically about like, you know, what do you think of adoption? That was his like message over and over again. If you market it as a competitor to Twitter, you will lose. If it's just infrastructure that enables new things, you will win. That simple. I think something that's super important here, and increasingly as I'm thinking about sort of putting on my investor hat, where do I want to be? You know, what kinds of new experiences do I want to invest in? You know, I think that people are like, oh, let's build this, you know, whatever, like a prediction market. It's like, that's cool. But you know, it's so much cooler. And I think, you know, Nick, this is really interesting for MDK to think about is how do you make it super easy to remix and let agents with their own wallets interact with each other? That to me is where this is going to get super cool. So imagine for a minute, you know, prediction markets took a long time to take off. They're finally starting to take off. But I think we haven't even seen, you know, 0.01% of what prediction markets can do. Like right. if you read guys like, I think like Robin Hanson, a lot of people that have talked about like prediction markets, really like what does an economy really do? It is an information processing unit. It allows you to find information. That's what's beautiful about economy. And by the way, there's something like this goes back to my energy information entropy piece, which is continuing to stew in the background. But like the important thing, like forget all the like moral arguments or whatever. It's like, you know, the sort of Hayek view of how an economy should work is like when you go in there and distort with money printing or regulations or whatever, it's not just like, oh, you know, you're a bad guy or this, that. It's like, no, you're messing up the information signal. So the economy can't tell you we need more of, you know, we're short on steel. And, you know, therefore we can't. And this is also one of the reasons I'm so long and just like trust the curves. It's emergent intelligence. Like stop trying to like think your human brain can figure stuff out. It can't. None of us can. Stop it. Just stop it. Emergent intelligence is the answer always. And anyways, so just like some of these ideas around things like futurarchy and the ability to use prediction markets in the future to like as like, you know, kind of like a sort of new form of voting. And critically, what's going to be cool with that is agents can do it and you can mash all these things up together. So it's like, hey, instead of building like the next prediction market for humans, it's like, who's going to build a prediction market that agents can use?
Yeah, absolutely. Have you seen, by the way, have you seen the Polymarket Times?
No.
This is a cool hack worth looking at. Some kid took all the information from...
Sorry, I was just responding to Nick, HFT prediction market agents. There we go.
Oh, what? Yeah, and I mean, those things are happening. There's actually a cool blog post I'll share with you about the, or maybe I already shared with you.
No, that was probably the other chat.
The other chat. Yeah. I didn't see it either.
Oh, I didn't share that. I thought it's actually a thing about a guy who's building a bunch of basically like trading bots to find signal on Twitter and then execute trades.
DK is so exclusive now. He just has himself in it.
I think he's just proving your point. As no, material resources go to zero, DK's exclusivity is him and his bots.
But so there's a broader topic that plus one's what you were saying, Max, around kind of, you know, information economy, which is we think about the old pre-internet media and information landscape as like, you know, newspapers, they get, you know, they own distribution, they own the printing press. And so that's how truth is kind of disseminated, is through that. And the internet was supposed to be this amazing thing that opened up all those channels, made it free to distribute, gave everybody a voice. And we saw that, and that was really good at the beginning. And then we've seen that decay in certain ways.
Yep.
When everybody has a voice, who controls the algorithm is actually more important than who has a voice. And we also are now getting to this point where AI generative slop is going to end up filling up a lot of the media. What we think of as information nodes is going to get filled with AI generated stuff that's maybe entertaining, but not super informative, right?
Yeah.
And so I think that a prediction market is not just some new class of betting or marketplace or exchange. It's actually a new type of information source.
Amen.
So think about
it's sort of the evolution of the internet, and it's in the marketplace of like yes, no on a bid is really like a truth seeking signal.
Amen.
And it's kind of what we talk about with like Stacker News, or what we hope that like, oh, maybe Bitcoin scarcity work can be part of the thing. But instead of it just being like the scarcity or proof of work tied to a particular piece of information in an upvote, it's actually resolves the world through kind of bid ask spreads and convergence. And so actually like a prediction market is more like a new Twitter than it is just like some new exchange in my mind.
And by the way, there was a beautiful post on Stacker News. And by the way, I'm super bullish on Stacker News. I've always been bullish on Stacker News, but I'm continuing to. Keon has finished his like 15-month migration or whatever to be non-custodial. Yep. And he sent us all an update and said on the site yep. as well that he's going to be focusing on like user requests again, which and making things nice. And Keon's one of the big brains, so I'm excited.
Oh, yeah.
But like someone made a post where they're like, the Stacker News front page is an auction.
Yep.
And that, I mean, auction, prediction market, like whatever. But like, I think, and Keon, if you happen to listen to this, I hope you continue to explore this idea of agents using Stacker News as well, which I know you've already kind of built that in there. But using Stacker News and things like it as information discovery tools, like that's where the big, big idea is. And you can already see it just like in a very simple term. It's like, what filters to the top of your Stacker News page? Well, you can have all the bots in the world that are just slop, 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 slop. But like, you have to pay. And people yep. then pay with their money to upvote. Like that is non-forgeable. That's the point of money. That's the why Bitcoin matters. And because Bitcoin is tied to proof of work and energy, you can't forge it. That's the whole point.
Yeah.
All right.
Amen.
How about we get back to...
Amen, brother.
I got to tell you, I went to church in Oakland for the first time recently. It reminded me of going to church in the Pacific Gulf Coast in New Orleans as a kid. It was a lot of amens. It was great. I loved it.
Nice.
You guys wanted to talk about teenagers vibe coding, I think, right?
Yeah.
So a couple angles on this. I mean, we were just talking about prediction markets. And also, DK, you shared a post that Shazan just posted about younger people not feeling like they can become wealthy or grow their wealth. So they're turning to like, you know, crypto trading and now prediction markets as a way to
gambling,
right?
Yep.
And, which can be unhealthy and ultimately for most people is not a way to, it's a way to,
yep.
you know, it's a negative EV.
Negative EV.
On yep. So perhaps a healthier way is the time-tested entrepreneurial approach where you build value creation for the world and then you get a portion of that. So vibe coding is a way that makes it accessible to way more people to build things, right? We've talked about that a lot. I had an insight. I actually was playing a mobile game and I got an ad for Kalshi, like one of the prediction markets, right?
Yep.
And it just made me realize, oh, that, you know, this is how they're acquiring a lot of customers, yep. probably a lot of younger folks to do that. And it's like, why not instead try to get teens and younger, I mean, a lot of people, but including teens to start vibe coding because yep. it's absolutely accessible to them. They're going to have incredible ideas, ideas that no one else in the world can think of. They can create them. And then now with like things like MDK, it's so easy to add payments.
Yep.
And also, you know, if they're in India or someplace around the world, or they're just young and more risk-taking, like, you know, generating and also generating small amounts of revenue, like there's going to be more risk taking.
And I want to be clear because I think the genius inside of what you're saying here, like the India part is great, but like in the US, if you're under 18, you can't open a bank account. That's right. That's huge. Like think about like, I think how many super smart kids, you know, like all the kids are going to go to like MIT or whatever that are sitting there in some like, you know, daycare center, i.e. school that like, if they could start a business from class when they're supposed to be studying, what would they start?
I think the big difference too is this is a positive EV.
Yes.
Right? Instead of negative EV. Because I think what's happened is as, you know, take an 18-year-old 50 years ago, we could probably like just get, you know, go to some random college, get a random college-educated job and actually buy a house. There's no way, even if you're at the top end of the top end, you can barely do that without a bunch of good fortune hitting you. So everybody who's 18 has gotten pushed out on the risk curve really far. So the only way to possibly do something is to get lucky at it versus, and so you end up getting, you know, all the value gets sucked by these platforms and sort of the old heads.
But with vibe coding, with vibe coding, instead of, you know, spending a ton of money, you can vibe code something for $25, right? And you could end up making $1 million out of that. So you can, you turn that betting, it's a form of gambling. Entrepreneurship's a form of gambling, right? It's like you've got that buzz, you've got that excitement, that potential for the huge outcome. Well, you can do that now with $25 input and $1 million output. That's a positive EV type of calculation. So I think you can actually move that same instinct that drives people toward gambling and move it toward, let's gamble on ourselves.
Yeah.
And well, a positive EV.
The bottom line, and even though not everyone's going to spend $25 to get $1 million, there will be losers, just like an entrepreneurial game. Yeah. But the sum total, though, it's creating value in the world and growing the pie where gambling is not.
So I think two big thoughts to crystallize for me. Number one is exactly that. Like, I think there is so much in the world today, anger about wealth inequality and disparity and all this stuff, because there's a fundamental confusion between wealth generation, entrepreneurship, and growing the pie versus finding tricky ways to get more of a fixed pie. Like, a lot of people hate on quote unquote rich people, whatever, because they just think of them as these, and rightfully so, like, basically tricksters who are bankers or whatever, playing pee and shell games and just like take your money, and or people that just got lucky gambling, just like, you spun a wheel, you know, fuck you, you won, like everyone else loses. So it is the difference between zero sum and positive sum. And that is a critical, like, it maybe the most important thing for a whole society to internalize. If you're just spinning a wheel or you're doing tricky stuff to make money, then like, you're hurting everyone else. If you build something net new and you are an entrepreneur and you grow the pie and you get a piece of that pie, but everyone else gets an even bigger piece of the pie, because that's what you're doing, is you're taking some of the value you create, not all of it. Like, definitionally, you're making society a wealthier, quote unquote, more productive, interesting place. So, you know, my hope for society and with tools like this is you can, like, not only like, is this a great business opportunity to get young kids making stuff, but this is a way to teach, instead of nihilism and gambling, this is a way to teach basically being a positive member of society.
Yeah. So going back to like, how can we double down on the Bitcoin payments narrative? Like, this to me is something that's like, not only trying to grow Bitcoin payments, but it's like trying to improve society. Like, a much more positive message to send to young people, like, become entrepreneurs. It's never been easier to become an entrepreneur.
Totally. And I would even take that one step further, which is to say, not only is it a great positive message, but like, think about, like, you know, I kind of joked about this. Sorry, I'm playing footsie with Steve. I kind of joked about this, but
DK is not here.
DK's out, and what, I don't know what the right joke is, but I should pay you to get the right joke. think about, and I want to figure this out as an investor's way. Like, sort of selfishly, I see a huge opportunity here, right? Which is, you know, what arguably has been like the most successful pseudo investment thing of the last 20 years?
Tether.
Well, I maybe want to phrase it better, because it's not exactly an investment, but like, I'll just cut to the chase. It's the Thiel Fellowship, right? Like, Thiel Fellowship is probably the highest hit rate I say investment in quotes because I don't think there was any equity tied to it. It's just like whatever. But why was the Thiel Fellowship so successful? Well, it took a secret about the world, which is to say that there are a lot of really, really, really smart people that have capability to go and do really, really cool things that are getting sucked off into an old world dying system to become like, I don't know, like, get useless credentials in college, right? And so Peter Thiel, who often sees things way out of the curve, realized if you could give these people enough support financially and otherwise to, as you say, take a risk on yourself, try things, and you find really smart people, they're probably going to build really big things. And I think even more than YC, and YC is kind of a form of this too, I think they, I don't know, like, the amount of like $1 billion ideas that have come out of this is like insane. You can go look at the list for yourself.
And there's also that's sort of looking at it with sort of like the traditional venture capital $1 billion idea business. But could you imagine the kid who's like 15 who builds a business that generates $10 million a year?
Life-changing.
Yeah. I mean, just whatever you want, you know, you can double down, you can grow it, you can keep it and do other lifestyle things. Like, the opportunities are just immense.
So I see the opportunity with MDK, and I was asking Google, I don't know if I can do this yet. I would love to do some sort of like a contest where it's like, okay, MDK targets, you know, high schoolers, smart kids between the ages of whatever, 13 and 18 yeah. that can't open a bank account yet. Hey, kid, are you trapped in some boring ass daycare where they're trying to tell you information that was already useless 2 years ago? Cool. Instead, why not sit there in class and do something useful for the world, build an incredible business? And I would love to figure out how to like invest. All right, whoever wins, you know, whatever, your first 100K into the business, which, you know, selfishly, that's a great deal. Now, Google says the kids can't quite sign legally binding contracts yet. So there's more to figure out. But I think it's basically just taking the Thiel Fellowship ideal and going a level earlier. And so I think, you know, Nick, if you're still listening to this, I really believe enabling everyone, but particularly the really like capable kids, they're already capable at 14. Like, remember you guys in high school, like I'm guessing you were already pretty freaking smart. I know my friends were. And like, yeah, a lot of them were kind of just like wasted 6 years. And not wasted because, you know, there's other experiences.
Well, I was talking to a friend of mine who was instrumental in helping establish. No,
that's the me right there. Nick Eamon with the what's his name, the Mr. Pink from Boardwalk Empire. You know, how do you do, fellow kids?
No, but a friend of mine who was instrumental in helping establish the Thiel Fellowship, and I pitched him on your idea that you discussed. And he's like, this seems like
the— I'm giving away my alpha now, DK.
This seems like the right way to upstream that thing. Great. It upstreamed a lot of the like the more traditional channels, but you can actually upstream that now because you can actually accept payments and build things.
Exactly.
And you don't need— so I think you put together a 100K prize, give one Bitcoin or whatever it is, and make a prize and get people to apply and enter and then compete for the prize and up level and motivate people to be— because you don't need— the Thiel fellow was like, drop out of school, I'm going to give you 100K because there's some cost to it, right? This is actually upstream of that. This is, don't drop out of school. You're in high school. Here's $25, or Replit will donate the CPU cycles.
Totally.
Go build something awesome, right? As part of this program, compete for one Bitcoin that you're going to get paid out if you win this program. And whoever can maybe generate the most money in the, you know, first 180 days gets the Bitcoin prize.
So that's exactly what I was thinking. I'm super in to do that. We just need to figure out how to structure the contract. If there's even a contract, or maybe it's just like,
think,
you know,
if
they're a fund, then it's just a gift or
you
something.
Need donors or, you know,
exactly.
Or through a fund,
you can
put your fund fees into it.
Maybe our theoretical saver here can contribute. Much better position than Biddy and Co. But anyways. It's a good idea. And honestly, like, Nick, like, this is the kind of thing to be like, society transformative. So
there also may or may not be a new community launching next week.
There is,
if it might launch if it does launch next week, we'll probably talk about it in the show next week. That could be a vehicle for
I was not sure how much that may overlap with this, because they're related, but they kind of rhyme, but they're not quite the same, right?
Yeah, we'll have to in our other chat group, the one without Max, we'll have to discuss that.
This is just me, Steve, and Biddy.
This should be
the directly
be in the MDK chat. I'm offended. Since DK has already volunteered to fund it, all fine. In your chat.
Anyhow, I think I'm actually— I was already excited about this before talking about it on the show, but just talking about it now, I find it invigorating.
Yeah.
Just
do you think, Steve, I'm curious now, because you have maybe the most depth on each of these. Do you feel like this thing is it different, or is it kind of a branch of the same? Like, is it a different program, or?
It's maybe an evolution of it. It's maybe like phase two. Could be separate. Let's chat about it next week.
But what I bet if we just, like, similar to the advice I was giving, don't talk about Bitcoin, don't talk about Nostr. I wonder if this program were just kind of like a vibe code for a prize kind of thing that you could get tons of hitters involved with and really draw a lot of attention to the thing.
Totally.
You know, it happens to be that maybe MDK and Bitcoin is how you mostly take payments, but you can also take stable coins if you want. And there's a lot of ways to integrate those things. But really, the program is not necessarily about Bitcoin, but it's about getting paid for your work, building things and getting paid when you're like in high school.
Totally. And I think the key thing, I don't know about the stablecoin piece, maybe you can, but like the key insight here is that it's permissionless. So yeah, you don't need a bank account. So if you're 12 or 13 or 14, like, I mean, no one can stop you.
And I'm sure Replit has got to love this, right? I mean, so good.
Of course.
For
this is like Omjaa's original vision. If you go back to the way he used to talk, I mean, they went all kind of like enterprise because it kind of had to. But like, if you listen to him from 7 years ago, his whole thing was, how do I empower kids like me when I was back in, you know, the Middle East that don't have access, don't have opportunity? Yep. I mean, this is literally his mission, or it was.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll ring the bell on that.
So, I better be in that chat too. I'll be stealing all my alpha.
We got a few minutes left. We're going to do a buck real.
Oh, right, this is a good one, actually.
DK wasn't sure if we should talk about it or not. I don't know. But I mean, I find it interesting. I don't know. But
I was just saying, I didn't want to try to tee it up because I didn't think I knew enough about it.
And I'm not an expert on, but I didn't research buck. But what is buck? I don't know. So, what's it? Travis Van der Zanden announced it this week. He has an interesting backstory with Lyft and Uber. People can go research if they want.
And Bird, he was the founder of Bird.
And he founded Bird.
He tried to cleanse from the internet.
So, and I also saw some Bitcoiners like Plutiter shitting on it. So let me be clear. I'm not advocating buck. I don't know anything about the company or the token.
As Steve says, he goes all in on buck.
I may or may not
receive
a 20% pre-mine. No pre-mine here. The reason I found I found it interesting is because it literally was predicted on this show 5 months ago. It was when we were talking about Stretch, STRC, one of the equities from MicroStrategy, where they've created what we viewed as a stable coin, built on Bitcoin, though, not on U.S. treasuries and like a reserve like that. And we talked about, you know, maybe Robinhood could create the token or a third party. And well, guess what? That's exactly what Buck appears to be to me. It's built on top of Stretch and it offers 7% yield. Stretch is paying, I don't know what it's paying now, but it was in the 9 to 10% range.
It's 11% now.
11, yeah. He kicked it up to 11.
So there's a margin there. Now, one of the criticisms I saw from Plutiter, the Plutiter account, which I didn't go confirm, is that they're taking half the yield themselves.
Well, they're taking 4%.
Buck is. Yeah. Well, it wasn't clear to me if it's just that spread or if they're taking even.
Oh,
or I don't know. Anyway. So I have no idea. Is this a scam or not a scam? I don't know. But assuming there's no like weird gotchas, then it is a form of what we thought could be created. And as long as there's not any like, scammy type aspects to it, I think it's an interesting thing. Because I assume it's not a pre-mine. I assume there's a lot of the things that we don't like about other tokens that are created, I don't think apply here.
Right.
It's more, so assuming the total risk is the stretch, you know, the risk you're taking on with Stretch, and then you'd also be taking on some kind of risk with this new company around Buck. As long as it's limited to that risk, I think it's an interesting introduction.
I agree it's interesting, and I'm glad you brought it up. One thing I know, I did a little bit more research on it, and one thing I'll note is that it's not available to people in the US, and I think that's because there's been
theoretically
Sorry. Only US or ex-US or
ex-US. In the U.S., you're not allowed to use it.
Okay.
And I think that's because I think it violates all the recent stablecoin legislation. I think the recent stablecoin legislation was saying you cannot share yield with consumers, right? And for obvious reasons that's kind of a protectionist clause. And so they are sharing yield with consumers. And so they say no U.S., which I think is actually a real opportunity, is to like create stablecoins that do share yield of various forms with consumers,
with the users of the coin. But I mean, that might not be enough to get it off the ground, but it does not allow, it doesn't support US users.
So I have a lot of thoughts on this. I think, again, if you kind of take your hat of just like see reality clearly and how it's going, I think this is exactly what we predicted. It's like actually, it's all playing out exactly as it should and makes sense. So there was a podcast that I recommend listening to. I think I shared it in the group chat over the break. If you haven't checked it out, it was a recent Sailor interview on, I think it was on the Galaxy one. It was excellent.
Your advice, yeah.
Absolutely excellent. And look, I mean,
he talks about that same thing, the stretch as effectively a yielded stablecoin, right?
He literally asks people to do what this guy is doing. And, you know, you can have your own opinions on Sailor. And I know for the hardcore Bitcoin people, it's like, whatever. He's doing something different than what you want. That's fine. Just, again, zoom out. This is how we get, you don't go from A to Z. You go to A to B, B to C. That's how reality works. And so what Sailor did, and I have to give him credit, you know, regardless of what you think of him values, like he is so damn smart and so damn eloquent, and he can take very complex ideas and he can explain them beautifully. So the way he explains it is his vision of the world, his theory of change or whatever you want to call it today is Bitcoin is capital. Bitcoin is capital.
Bitcoin is money.
No. Critically, Bitcoin is capital, not money. This is an important point.
Oh, yeah.
Bitcoin is capital. His company, Strategy, exists to be a refinery. They take capital. And just like, you know, if you're a wildcatter in Texas, and you get this raw oil from the ground, great, that's a very valuable resource. But I can't just like take that and put it into my car, right? So his company exists to refine the raw capital into credit. And that's what Stretch is and all of his different instruments he offers, right? And so what does it mean to offer credit? Well, you take capital and you package it. I even got the mannerism now.
That's really good. If I had my eyes closed, I would have thought, yeah. Mm-hmm. Have you been working on that?
Bitcoin is digital capital. Capital becomes credit.
How about this?
Credit
Max?
Becomes money.
How about this? Have you seen those ones?
But I got to give the guy, Sailor, if you happen to listen to this ever, like I'm teasing you, but like respect, like this guy's playing 12D chess, right? So capital becomes credit. And so he offers different credit. He takes the raw oil. We should need Steve to do it because I believe Steve was called out as a Sailor lookalike. No,
I was called that, but I don't do imitations.
Okay. Steve's got the look, Max, you got the voice.
So you take that, and what you do then is you take the raw resource and you package it in a way that the market can use, just in the way that you take oil and you package it in a way that the physical infrastructure in the world, the cars, can use. And so he has all these different products. Stretch is a very interesting product because it's targeting the U.S. Treasury, essentially. And what he's doing is, he over-collateralizes an instrument with Bitcoin. And so if you believe, I forget if it's like 6x over-collateralized or whatever it is, but if you believe, and you go back and listen to our comment on this 5 or 6 months ago, but if you believe that Bitcoin continues to grow at a CAGR of 20% or whatever it's been, 30%, or even less than that, if you believe Bitcoin goes up over time, then he's radically over-collateralized. Now he has the $2 billion in cash as well to keep making these payments. And he can give the market, people that want things like fixed income, investors that need to buy equities, all these different things that maybe are bullish on Bitcoin, believe in it at least enough to think it's going up 20% CAGR over the next decade. But they can't buy it directly, or they just want that, like, you know, maybe they're retired and they want that sort of pension like payment, then this is a perfect opportunity for them. Now, what I missed when we talked about this last time was capital goes to credit. And then we discussed, and I think DK, maybe it was you that said maybe he makes the stablecoin. What he then said in this podcast was, I want another whole round of entrepreneurs to come and take credit and turn credit into money. And that's a big concept, because what he's saying is, you know, this buck thing, who knows about this guy? Maybe it's a scam, maybe it's not, but it's just the first of many. And you're going to see a giant free market. Basically, you're going to see like free banking on steroids here. Anyone that can access that Stretch credit can now go and create money. Which, and people will be able to compete with their own money, right? It's going to be a free market, right? So some people will say, hey, man, you know, I'm getting paid 11%, I'll pay you 7%. Well, hey, Buck, that's cool. I'm going to pay you $8. And so free market's going to free market. Margins will compress. Yeah. There will be different rates paid based on different regulatory schemes. Maybe Brazil lets you do it. The U.S. doesn't. So there's going to be like, you know, different rates for where you are in the world. But anyways, the point is, and I've even thought about this, all the like sort of like neobanks that are operating with Bitcoin and stuff, like it's a very interesting thing to explore. Is this an opportunity to offer an instrument, ideally it one day even interops if you're, you know, whatever, through Taproot assets or whatever it is, Spark, with the Bitcoin network, but to offer this this stablecoin that gives a yield. And critically, unlike all the other ones, you know exactly where the yield comes from. You know exactly what the risk is. I mean, there's different layers of risk with the company and in MicroStrategy, but like fundamentally the risk is, right, does Bitcoin go up 20% CAGR or not?
Yep. All right. Can we get a, it's going up forever, Laura? Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. All I can say is capital, credit. And seriously, I mean that as a shout out. Like Saylor's a genius.
He's awesome. Yeah,
he's a genius.
All right. I think we're at it. Shall we wrap?
Let's wrap. It was a good show.
Yeah. Fun to see you guys.
Yeah.
More next week.
Good times.